You're listening to The Berry Pod, tastings from Wine Country Live in the morning
on KVON.
Wine Country Live today, ready to talk about some wines and some vineyard and the history of a really interesting place in Napa Valley called Newton Vineyards. And we have three guests who are with us here today on that very topic, 40th anniversary, and we're going to learn a little bit about the Newton story today. Let me introduce the three guests who are in studio. We have the general manager, Jean-Baptiste Reveille. Good morning.
Good morning, Barry.
Also here in studio is the head of viticulture, Maya Comas Olds.
Good morning, Barry.
And last but certainly not least, the head of winemaking, Alberto Bianchi. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Barry.
Thanks for all coming in on a foggy morning, and you've brought some of your amazing wines, and we're going to talk about your story here a little bit. JB, if I may, can I use the familiar? Let's get started and talk a little bit about the history of this property. It's, as we mentioned, a 40th anniversary. How did the Newton Vineyard story begin?
It's a fascinating story. So it was created by Peter Newton, originally designed in 1977, but Peter Newton was not at his first attempt to create a winery. He actually was not a winemaker at the origin. He was a British gentleman who moved to the U.S. as a journalist and realized that there were some thrilling business opportunities, particularly in the paper business. So he developed a very big paper trading company here in the Bay Area and had a secondary house, as he should, in the Bay Area, in the wine county. And his neighbor told him how good his land was and that he should grow vines there and that they may actually buy his vines for winemaking. And as Peter was actually as passionate about business, wine, and gardening, he saw an opportunity to actually create his own winery, and that was Sterling Vineyard in 64. So he ran Sterling Vineyard until 77, when he decided to actually move to a different place. He thought that being on the mountainside would give his wine a much different profile than the valley floor. And so out of a genius stroke, I would say, he decided to sell everything at Sterling back in the day to Coca-Cola and create his winery. He bought a square mile of completely wild land on Spring Mountain, and he envisioned that he could create terraces and a winery over there. So that's the beginning of Newton. Started in 77, first vintage was 79, and this is what we are celebrating today.
It's a great story, and I'm always fascinated by those people who had the vision, you know, the pre-Paris tasting people, you know, who saw something happening here. Of course, you know, it was known that you could grow really good wine grapes here from the 1800s, but it got forgotten a little bit along the way. And people like Peter Newton were seeing something that was the future we're all living in, and they saw it coming. Maya Comas Olds next here. Now, first of all, you have the unique distinction of being named for where you're from and where you work. So most of us don't have that.
No, I was born and raised here, clearly. Maya Comas is the mountain range between Napa and Sonoma, for those that don't know, and mm-hmm. that's where I'm from, on the top of Mount Veeder.
Mm-hmm. And how long have you been making wine, or growing grapes, I guess I should say?
My family started a brand called Sky Vineyards before I was born, so I've been doing it for my whole life.
Mm-hmm. And how does this work at Newton fit into your bigger picture?
At Newton, we have three properties that we make our red wine off of, and they all sit in the Maya Comas Mount Veeder range. So my experience and understanding of the farming of the valley really is very helpful in these properties that are so unique and so special.
Mm-hmm. What makes them unique and special? And secondly, talk a little bit about the mountainside versus the valley floor issue, because I find this kind of interesting. There's a European versus American thing here in my perception.
So our main property is Spring Mountain. It is one of the most diverse properties we've worked on. in the valley, or I've seen in the valley. You were there on Wednesday last week. It's the terrain is crazy. It's super steep. We have a huge elevation change, but we have a bunch of different soil types. We have 9 different soil types across the property, so every block is different. We have about 70 blocks and 73 acres planted, so each block for the most part is less than an acre. We have one that's bigger. Mount Veeder is a little bit more uniform across the property, but it's still a mountainside. It's up on the top. Very different growing conditions than the valley floor. Our Yountville property, some of it's on the valley floor, but most of it's on the hillside where our wines come from. And then we have another property in Carneros, which actually sits in the Mayacamas, but it's at the valley. It's at the very bottom and base of the mountains. The mountainside wines tend to have a little bit more structure and a little bit more acid than the valley floor, which gives it that more European, what we call a more European style. It's still Napa Valley. We're still making Napa Valley wines. The valley floor is super easy to farm. It's flat. You can just kind of go for days. But on the valley floor, every single thing has to be done different. Most of what we do has to be done by hand. We're working to change some of that with new technologies we're bringing on, but it's very different than the valley floor.
Yeah. Is it correct that what we see there at Newton Vineyard is not a planting that could take place today here?
So in the 90s, I think it was 1992, they passed the Hillside Ordinance in Napa Valley. So today it's much, it's still possible to put in new vineyards on the hillside, but it's very challenging with the regulations. The laws were put into place to protect from, protect our watersheds and our valley to make sure that we have this valley here in another 200 years.
And yet, in Europe, you commonly see terraced vineyards like the type that were planted there years ago, and it works in Europe. Why can't it work here?
It can work here, and there's more of the valley that we technically could plant, but then we would not have the diverse, unique Napa Valley that we have today. So it's, I think it's a very good thing that we're protecting it.
Very good. Let's turn to Alberto Bianchi, who is the head of winemaking. Good morning.
Good morning, Barry.
You've been busily opening some bottles. We're going to taste some of the wine. That's a terrible thing to have to do at early in the morning. Tell us a little bit about what it's like to make wine from this particular vineyard, these vineyards you have and these fruits.
Yes, absolutely. The complexity that Mayacamas was explaining is completely real. For us, we took some time actually to learn from the vineyard, and that was our starting point. We had to understand, first of all, the character of each single vineyard we have in the different appellation, without excluding actually Carneros, because we learned a lot from it. And then once we've done that, we could focus more in depth within each vineyard through the blocks. So for our own learning, we decided to vinify as much as we can possibly do every block aside, so that we could see the potential first of the vineyard, but then of the single block, and then utilize obviously the blending later to express as much as possible the condition of that vineyard and what that vineyard can actually produce and give us. So in fact, we are trying not to homogenize, actually to keep the differences within the wines and explain that through the wines itself.
The wines, as you mentioned, I was at the luncheon you had last week. Thank you for having me. That was really a great treat. We tasted a wine from the original vintage, the 79 Cabernet, which was really kind of spectacular. I don't want to fall over myself talking about it, but, you know, expectations on 40-year-old wine can be pretty broad. You don't know what you're going to get. What did you this is obviously not a wine that you made. You were a little boy when that wine was made.
I was not.
You were not even a little boy. You were somebody's idea. What did you think of that? Based from your experience and knowledge, were you as impressed by that as I was?
So the first time I had the luck to try that wine, I was actually with my family. They came from Italy to spend a couple of weeks here, and I had this bottle with me, which I decided to open one night, and I was expecting a good wine, but not at all what we actually found. And that has been very eye-opening, because it's the representation right there of the potential that our place have. Now, we have been looking very much to the past and see what has been done and what is actually the potential of the property, not just the vineyard, but overall the property. And then today we base on that. Obviously, we utilize a more modern key, but that's how we look to the future. We want to keep the character of our place into our wines. And maybe step back as winemakers and leave the land to express more itself rather than drive it to be where we think it should. We let it be as it is.
Maybe we should taste the first wine as we continue talking here. And Maya Kamas, I'd like to ask of you, what's the synergy between yourself and the winemaker, Alberto, here? How does that relationship work? In many places, the director of winemaking or wine growing is supervising the vineyard and the winery. So you guys have to work together because you're not a single person.
So Alberto and I started working together in 2017, and he brings a complexity of into the winery of having worked all over the world and being from Italy and really understanding different wine styles of the world, and that coupled with my understanding of the way Napa works and the vineyards here really help us put together a strategy to make sure that we're farming the vineyards very sustainably and with a lot of giving the vines, like he said, the best chance to make grapes that really speak to the place that they're from. And the two of us together work every single week to make sure that we have a strategy for the grapes and the wine that will make wines that last. And when somebody's drinking these wines in 40 or 50 more years, they're still getting the experience that we got last week when we were drinking the 79.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So tell us about this wine that we've just gotten in our glasses.
Yes, I just poured the 2016 unfiltered Chardonnay. Now, unfiltered Chardonnay has been for Newton a very, very important and a successful wine. This starts back in the 90s. Newton was already making Chardonnay, but still on the label was no mention of unfiltered. And what the Newton family did, they put this name, unfiltered, to basically say we are not filtering the wine. But then, so they were talking about a technique, or if you want, a non-technique that they utilize. But then through the time, that became almost linked to the winery for a long time. When you say unfiltered Chardonnay, still today, people linked it directly to Newton, even though today there are different unfiltered Chardonnays. We decided to obviously keep this on the label for our Napa Valley appellated wine, but really the technique we extended to everything. So today we do not filter any of the wines we make, but on our red blend, the Puzzle or the single vineyard reds, you're not going to find that on the label. We do it because we think we can make wines that are more linked to the place in this way, because without filtration, really, we strip nothing out of the wine. For Chardonnay, we utilize our own vineyard, which is located in Carneros. That's the vineyard Maya Kamas was talking about. And then on the side, we partnership with growers, mainly the Carneros area, and that with long-term view, long-term relations. We really need to be able to make wines from the same blocks year after year so that our knowledge of that is better and better. Winemaking, even though a lot of people think it's a science, it is a science, but often it's a wrong science and it's very, very empirical. So the experience that you can get traveling through the world, it's important, not because you're going to learn something about this particular place, is because maybe you're gonna widen your point of view and your understanding. I feel that more I learn, the less I know. So also working with somebody like Maya Kamas, that is originally from here, it's very helpful because obviously we don't know everything, and sometimes we can miss something, and so partnering with people also from the place, it's extremely important.
Is there such a thing anymore as European style winemaking versus American style winemaking? Is it homogenized now to where everybody's thinking the same ways?
I think what Napa Valley went through in the last 50, 40 years, it's incredible because to start to understanding the potential of different areas within a small viticultural region, because Napa Valley is pretty small within itself. Now we have the AVA and we start to have the sub-AVA, if you want, or the vineyard. Happened in less than half century. Well, in Europe, we had centuries and centuries to figure that out. Again, it's very empirical. Now, I think where winemaking is going throughout the world is not necessarily has to be looked like European style or New World style. I look at it more who is able to express better its own place and what is the potential of that particular place. Great wines can be made everywhere. You just need a great place and understanding of it.
That's Alberto Bianchi. He's the head of winemaking at Newton Vineyards. We're also talking with Maya Camas Olds, the head of viticulture, and Jean-Baptiste Reveil, the general manager. We're all here in the studio tasting this incredible 2016 Chardonnay. I don't know. How would you describe this wine if you were introducing it to someone?
I would start looking at it through my viewpoint of a general manager, and I think this is one of the icons of our portfolio. People know Newton through Unfiltered generally, and Unfiltered Chardonnay in particular. I think looking at the history of Newton Vineyard, Unfiltered is very important. That was really what made Newton stand out at the origin, and that's one of the things we celebrate as we're celebrating our 40th vintage this year. It also is, I think, really a tribute to Peter Newton's vision. His vision was really to indeed go in a place that was unusual, rugged mountains, to some extent because he thought, coming from Europe, the best wines come from slopes most of the time, and it must not be easy. It has to be difficult so that it's good. So I think that was the original vision. But besides, he had also a vision that natural was better. So with natural, we don't mean the definition of natural wines today with no sulfite, et cetera, but a very reasonable, sustainable usage of the land. Mm-hmm. And so this Unfiltered Chardonnay for me embodies that vision. If you go come visit Newton Vineyard, you'd see a place that is actually surrounded by forest and wildlife. Purposefully, only a fifth of the estate is planted, and the rest is mm-hmm. left untouched because sustainability, right from the beginning, was what Peter Newton was looking for. And maybe not so much for as an environmentalist, but more because for him, sustainability was a mix of course, keeping the place in the best possible condition, but also it would help the business if it was kept in the best possible condition. Mm-hmm. And so that's this mix of it's good for the land, but it's good for us as well to be sustainable.
I have a feeling, you know, there are probably literally a couple of hundred unbelievable places in Napa Valley that I haven't ever seen. I've lived here 33 years, and every few months I discover something else that I didn't know existed. And this was an example of that for me visiting the property. There are aspects to it that are so unique in my experience, especially the garden there on the very tip top of one of those hills. Describe that and talk a bit about visitation at the winery and what you do with folks who want to come see this place.
Right from day one, Peter Newton wanted his new winery to be as inconspicuous as possible. So he thought that as we were getting from the land, we should not impose ourselves with massive architecture. So today, if you come and visit Newton Vineyard, I hope that would be the first thing that strikes you. In fact, 100% of our production area is buried. You don't have any building where, you know, like stands out on the mountain. So it's caves. We have one cellar that's actually was built, but then covered with earth. And on top of this cave, it came actually in the making. You know, it was not planned as such. But when Peter Newton looked at that building that they just had built, he was like, ah, you know, it's not really mingling with the environment. And by the way, if we were putting some earth and a garden on top, that building would probably be more environmentally friendly because would probably use way less energy than if we leave it as such. So we covered it with a garden. So today, visiting Newton is really visiting a winery that has tried from D1 to integrate with its environment whilst helping this environment to stand out. So it is not just like we've left things as they are. Yes, we've planted vines, so that meant we had to create some roots and terrace, etc. But we've tried to magnify this incursion into our land. So Peter Newton, being passionate about gardens, he had this vision, hey, what can I do to make this transformation that we're doing on our environment look as beautiful as possible. Mm-hmm. And this is what I hope our visitors get out of their experience, this alchemy between nature, wine, vines.
And subtlety, right? Instead of look at me, it just is very natural, and you feel like you're engrossed with the topography and the look of the land itself, not a bunch of, as you say, buildings. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of look at me buildings these days, it seems. And the Asian influence mixed with the English garden is also kind of fascinating. Where does the Asian part come from?
So Peter Newton's wife, Suhan Newton, was born in China. And had traveled the world, stopped in London before moving to the USA. And they had this idea that their winery was a celebration of land, but also a celebration of their vision and their history. There would be no Newton Vineyard if there was no Peter Newton and Suhan Newton. So they decided to add some elements of their past into their winery. And so the most remarkable parts of it is this mix of culture. Peter Newton was English, very francophile, and of course lived in the U.S. So you have this French garden, which is extremely structured, and it's one of the landmarks of Newton Vineyard. You have this English booth, English telephone booth on your way up to the winery. And then you have this rose garden, these rose gardens, I should say, because we have several gardens that are meant to be a connection to his English past. And also we have some Japanese and Chinese gates, as well as ornaments around these gardens. And the only building that really stands out is a pagoda, which is Sue has connection to her past. The pagoda is the lab. It's a three-story building that has just been refreshed, renewed from the original drawings of Peter Newton, where you actually, if you go to the third level, you have an absolutely unique view on the valley. And I really mean it with unique. On the one hand, you see the Napa Valley. On the other hand, you see Spring Mountain. You have the intact, you have the new word near you, just right there at your eyes. It's really spectacular.
It is, indeed. I highly recommend it. There are probably people listening who've never visited, like me, that are familiar with the name, perhaps, but haven't been there, and you'll be stunned when you do visit. I recommend it. We need to take a little break here as we're talking with our guests from Newton Vineyards. They're celebrating their 40th anniversary, and we'll return in just a moment. We'll talk more with the general manager, the director of viticulture, and director of winemaking, all here on the air with us. We are talking in this segment of the show with guests from Newton Vineyard, and we have with us in studio Jean-Baptiste, the GM. We have Maya Camas, who's the head of viticulture, and Alberto, who's the head of winemaking for Newton Vineyards. We were just talking off the air about this incredible 79 Cabernet that was tasted at this lunch last week, 40 years ago, the first vintage from the winery. And then when the 2016, I believe, was the other cab we tasted, when you tasted those side by side, you could immediately get the commonality, the link between them, even though there's this 40-year span, which was kind of amazing to me. And it informed me about the importance of place, which is something, you know, everyone in winemaking talks about. Grapes aren't the same from different places, not even very close to each other in a place like Napa. Talk about that a little bit. I'd like to hear everybody's opinion on why that's important, for example.
I think right from day one, Peter Newton wanted to be on Spring Mountain because he identified that would create a wine of a distinctive flavor profile, I would say. We've worked a lot with the team to understand what Newton stands for in terms of style. And we came to the conclusion that there are three words that really matter for us. It's freshness, because we're from the mountain. You know, Spring Mountain is a spectacular place for winemaking. It is extremely complicated, believe me. I mean, it's everything that can be complicated is complicated over there, but it is worth it. It's a myriad of exposures, of soils, of temperature, climates. So that is extremely important for our identity, and freshness is what pops out. Then you have the depth, because, of course, we are California, we're Napa, we embrace our Californian weather, the sun, and this myriad of exposure, if they bring us freshness, they also give us some depth, some richness that are so important, and is what makes Napa such a great place to make wine. And finally, we like to add precision. This is the winemaking part, and Alberto will tell us more about how important it is to precisely get what the terroir has to tell us. So try to not make it up, but let it express itself without filters.
Hmm. Let's jump to the winemaker here and talk about that. Alberto, your thoughts on that commonality of flavor and those qualities that JB was talking about.
Yeah, I think as men on the planet, we have a very short life span if you consider time. The character of a place is unique, and needs to be expressed in our wines, because we are the only one that can decide that and step back and leave the place talking. Now, when you go in Europe, you have examples of important vineyards that have been utilized and then destroyed through wars and replanted, and still after 150, 200, 300, 400 years, giving beautiful wines, such as people understood that then, and then that vineyard is still utilized today. For me, it's just so beautiful thinking that in this way. So we are going to be around for a working period of, luckily, 50, 60 years. I think we have the duty as winemaker not to become too much egocentric towards ourselves and actually express what that land can give us. And this is not the same for every place we go. Some vineyards in some places don't have extreme character, and so they would produce wines that are enjoyable but not necessarily inspiring. Well, it happens that I think we have vineyards today that are inspiring, really. So we really work towards that with winemaking.
Mm-hmm. My comments, so to tie this together then, you know, you're looking back at this wine from 40 years ago. Certainly viticulture's changed in that time. Vineyard practices have changed. How do you maintain the consistency today?
So to maintain the consistency, I don't have to do that much at the end of the day. When I came on, we started farming organically in 2017 and using regenerative agriculture techniques. And at the end of the day, my job is to make sure that the soil is protected and the climate's protected and our water's protected so that these wines can still taste the same or not necessarily the same, but still have that similar line that you tasted in the wines that are coming in 40 or 60 or 100 years.
Yeah. One of the aspects that was mentioned earlier is the wild land setting of this. You mentioned a fifth of the total acreage is actually planted or developed, right? So it's like a wildlife preserve all around you. What do you encounter up there in that regard?
One of the things I love about Newton and all of our properties, actually, because it's the same story across all of them, is how much wild land there is. And you get to see a little bit of old Napa. We have bears and mountain lions and bobcats. We have I don't even know what it's called for some reason, but there's a den of coyotes that lives in the top of one of our blocks. Mm-hmm. Like, we see the specific guys every day. We see the babies in the spring. We have a bobcat that lives on the road on the way up that we get to see all the time. It makes the place unique, and it's an easy way to show people why it's worth protecting, mm-hmm. because there's the wildlife and the vineyards, and they're working well together, mm-hmm. and they're fully integrated. Yeah. We don't need to get rid of them. Hmm. They have a home there, too. Yeah,
exactly. And I think it also speaks to the reality that, for the most part, today, vineyards are not in opposition to the natural world. There are people who seem to still think that there is massive use of chemicals and all kinds of degradation in the environment. And that wouldn't be, you wouldn't have those animals if that were true, right?
Exactly. I mean, that's true in some parts of the world, but for the most part here in Napa, we've been really good at protecting that. And more people are understanding that you don't need these harsh chemicals to effectively and efficiently grow grapes. And the less chemicals you use, the more unique and true to place wine you get. And as the world gets more competitive with more wine brands all the time, you really need that true to place to make sure that everybody has a place to play in the industry.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk a little bit about the future and the marketplace for wine too, because that's a big part of your planning. Alberto, let's start with you. There's a feeling that there's a change taking place with the retirement of Robert Parker and this new way of talking about wine, different styles of winemaking, different varietals that people are getting into, the natural wine movement, all these different things. How does all of that affect what you do on a vintage-to-vintage basis?
We do see a change, and also with the generational change. I feel new generations want, or better, like less and less to be told what to like, and more want to try the wine and make their own opinion about it. And I think it's a natural evolution because now knowledge is more about wine. In the last 20 years, worldwide, I think the focus on wine and also food has become very important. So people now tend to have their own idea about it, but also compare quality with price, where the wine is coming from, what's the story behind it. So we today are striving to offer a unique product within our wines that is linked to our land. Now, within that, obviously, we have a window in which we can decide and play on the style of wines from very ripe to less ripe. And so what we're doing with the wines in general is driving the wines towards freshness and trying to respect as much as possible where they come from, which is Napa Valley on the broader end. So obviously our Chardonnays will be more bright, and that, I think, helps the drinkability of the wine. The wine doesn't have to bore you. Actually, the wine has to call you to take another sip and another sip. Those are the great wines. Important needs, for me at least, the wines need to go easily with food. And that match is it's one of the most beautiful things you can have. So we farm, and the main changes we have done to turn the wheel towards these directions are, yes, of course, in winemaking, but most of all in the vineyard. With the Chardonnays, we changed completely in 4 years the management of the canopy, going from exposed fruit to the sun to get more aromatics, I would say, and fruit-forward wines to more covered fruit that gives us much more bright aromatics and also retain that particularly in Carneros, iodine characters, marine characters that I think makes the wine very, very complex. As well as with Cabernet. With Cabernet and the reds in general, we do this depending on the place and depending on the vineyard exposition. We've been talking a little bit about how Spring Mountain is complex in terms of location. We have altitude, we have exposition, because our vineyards go towards north or south or east or west. We have them all, and then we have soil. So for the reds, we really go more block by block, deciding what to do to get the best. For me, when we end in the overripeness, we made a mistake somewhere, either in the vineyard or at picking time. And when we go on the underripe, obviously, also. So we need to get the fruit at the winery when all the elements are at the best moment. And we have sugar, obviously, acidity, aromatics, and tannic or phenolic structure. It happens that the ripeness of these elements doesn't necessarily go all together. So we have to pick at the point we believe is the best for these four elements to live together.
Very good. We're tasting the 2016 Cabernet, and this is from, I can't read the label, is that Spring Mountain?
No, here we are on the Napa Valley, so our unfiltered Cabernet. Uh-huh. It's a blend of our three properties.
Gotcha.
So this is a broader interpretation of Napa Valley. We mm-hmm. really go from north to south because we are on the Spring Mountain, as well as Yanville and Mount Vider. Ideally, it's a blend of a third of each of these vineyards. Mm-hmm. Then it depends on the vintage and the obviously yield that we get every year.
Of course, it's terrific. And the third wine is also is a red blend, correct?
The Puzzle, yes. This is actually our only red blend. This is a wine that comes from the beginning of the 90s with the idea to make the top wine for Newton Vineyard. Now, it's a wine that is really linked to the property on Spring Mountain, and it's probably the best interpretation of it because it regroups all the blocks that we have with the different varieties. So every year we get to pick what the best Cabernet blocks we have, what the best Cabernet Franc, Merlot, Petit Verdot, and Malbec, and blend them together. And that wine really expressed the Spring Mountain property, mm-hmm. because it's not just Cabernet focus. It's a blend of what we have there.
Yeah.
Lately, we have been using a good percentage of Cabernet Sauvignon. In this case, for 2017, we have about 72%, followed by Cabernet Franc, Merlot, and then Petit Verdot and Malbec, always, I would say, in small proportion, being wines that are very obvious in terms of aromatics. We don't want to overdo, mm-hmm. if you'd like.
Mm-hmm. Great flavor, and as you mentioned, such a good food pairing wine, the way the structure is. I want to eat something now. how many, my comments, how many total acres are you farming?
Total off the top of my head, I don't know. The three main properties each are about 68 to 70 acres of grapes. It's a majority, it's about 85% Cabernet, and then tiny bits and pieces of everything else.
So let's work toward wrapping up here. Some final thoughts on this, on these amazing wines, the invitation to people to come visit, learn more, and become part of the Newton Vineyard experience.
One thing that I think we're extremely lucky to have is indeed three different beautiful terroirs bringing different expressions to the wine. So I like to say Spring Mountain, where the winery is located, and it is a place that I invite everyone to come and visit because it's unique in Napa. I think brings a lot of elegance to our wines. Now we also have Yonville that we can find in the wines we're tasting right now. Yonville will bring you the depth and the I like to say it's ample. It's an ample.
Yeah.
Touch that it gives. And then you have Mount Vider. And Mount Vider is about the power, the strength. It's very muscular, and having the beauty. That great luck to have these three different vineyards that we can blend as we think is right to blend is something unique that we hope we are paying a good tribute to. Mm-hmm. So now people will be happy to come and visit Spring Mountain if they'd like. We are very close to the city of Santa Elena. We're actually within the city of Santa Elena. It's kind of fun. You have to enter the town, then drive through residential areas before you actually hit Madrona Road and climb all the way up to Spring Mountain. And here you really have a completely unique experience that can be all the way to the top of Spring Mountain. So we have a road that goes all the way to the ridge, and you, if you want to have this experience, you can book it with us. And you have a view that very few people have that opportunity to see.
Yeah, for sure. It's a stunning view. And I think you mentioned the other day that you're adjacent to the old Falcon Crest property. Is that correct? There's a name I hadn't heard in a long time. Used to be one of the main reasons people came here a few years back. It's been terrific fun talking with all three of you from Newton Vineyards, and I highly recommend visiting the place. Like I was saying, there are so many really unique places in Napa Valley that you may not have seen, no matter how long you've been around here. You can be live your entire life, and you don't know some of these places are there. So I would encourage you to go check it out. Visit the website. All your options for visitors, I'm sure, are there, right?
www.newtonvineyard.com.
It's an easy one. Very good. So many thanks to our guests, Alberto Bianchi, the head of winemaking. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you very much.
Bringing these delightful wines. Maya Camas Olds, head of viticulture. Have a good dormant season.
Thank you. I look forward to a little downtime.
And also Jean-Baptiste Reveille, the general manager from Newton Vineyards. Appreciate your time today, your hospitality last week at the lunch, and thanks for bringing in these beautiful wines today.
Thank you, Barry. Thank you.
Great pleasure.
Thank
you. Awesome. Very good. So we're going to wrap things up for today on Wine Country Live.
Keep it right here. More from the Barry Pod coming up
on KVON.